My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. Welcome all to the EDP F1 podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. We are here at Archant Towers to talk about the Korean Grand Prix, when Sebastian Vettel careered to his third straight victory, and with it, maybe a third straight title, which I think is pretty much what I said last week. I can't quite remember. Anyway, let me introduce you to the crew we have here. I have alongside me Silverstone's latest driving graduate, Perry Hamilton.
Hello, Michael.
Are you well? You enjoyed yourself at the single-seater experience?
Yes, single-seater experience. They put you in this mini Formula One car and you just get to hash it around Stowe Circuit for a little while. It was absolutely brilliant. It gives you a... If you don't already have it, it gives you a huge amount of respect for what the professionals actually manage to do. But it does make you want to race a little bit more. You
know, All the time.
You get the feel, you get the need for speed, as it were. But no, it was absolutely cracking day. Thoroughly recommend it to anyone out there.
You kept it between the white lines?
Absolutely. Didn't go off once.
True.
Absolutely fine. So I felt a little bit like Nick Heidfeld, you know, just a casual finisher. Not really setting anything alight. Just always just going to get there. So I came 6th fastest out of 12. As I was, because apparently I tweet now. I'm still not following you, but I did tweet to, one of our podcasters. I did tweet that I called it a very solid Toro Rosso performance. Nice. Nice and middle of the field. Hey, so I was pleased with it.
We love a quick Nick reference as well on the EDP Formula One podcast. It's always good. I'm delighted to say welcome back into the studio. I'm going to call it a studio. Is the editor of Gridwalk.tv, David Tillier. David, it's just an email we had from you last week. We've actually got you in the flesh this time.
It was, yeah. I feel honoured that I was still mentioned, yet I wasn't here. You know, I feel...
Wow, that's the weight of respect the EDP F1 podcast holds for you, David.
No, you just couldn't get anyone else, could you?
we did have a couple of minutes to fill, but there we go. And I'm delighted to say back again, Kyle Cumbers is here.
Hey,
how are you, Kyle?
I'm
you
very
well?
Thank you, yeah. Still great. Recovering from getting up early, but...
Well, this is it. It was an early start. We're going to probably have a couple more of these. Are we going to have a couple more of these? Only one, isn't it?
Well, I don't know.
India? That's
yeah. Sort of mid-morning.
Going to be mid-morning. Yeah. Time to check our clocks.
I've been a bad fan this year. I actually recorded Korea and then watched it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Bad fan.
And managed to avoid Twitter and Facebook. Oh, I didn't avoid my emails, though, because Pirelli sent me a press release and told me who'd won.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's kind of them.
But I kind of already knew anyway, so...
Well, as in your prediction, of course, which was right.
My prediction,
yeah. We'll get on to the predictions later, I think. Okay, then, let's start then, shall we, go through a few of the points with Korea. The obvious one being that Sebastian Vettel continued his recent dominance, if you like. He's led pretty much every lap, hasn't he, since he took the lead in Singapore. He's won those three races. He's looking primed, isn't he?
He is. He's looking like the Vettel that we've seen for the last couple of seasons. I mean, he's devastatingly quick when he doesn't have a huge amount of traffic to fight through. This is a guy who loves leading from the front. We've seen that year after year at the moment. At the moment, he now seems to have that reliability with him. After Valencia, we were having issues with the alternator. We all know that. He retired from the lead at one point. That's happened a few times this season, not just with Vettel, but we've had Hamilton drop out from the lead as well. So, you know, he's been unpredictable in that respect. He's looking very quick, very tough to stop at the moment.
How good is this Red Bull car, David? Because... It never really seemed the quickest. McLaren was sort of the perceived wisdom that was the quickest car. Lotus have been good, obviously, and Ferrari as well. They've been getting the most out of it. We never really sort of delved into how good the RB8 is.
Well, I think for the last few years, we've kind of been used to Red Bull launching a fast car out of the gate. You know, 2009, it probably was the best of the rest early on. It's just unfortunate for them that Braun was so much faster. And then in 2010, 2011, they had the quickest car overall. This year, it was quite a shock to actually have the Red Bull come out of the gate and actually be a bit of a dog, you know, and they couldn't quite get it set up right. They struggled for grip because they'd lost their blown diffuser and all the other bits and pieces. But they've done a bit of a McLaren, and they've taken what was fundamentally a poor car and turned it round, and they haven't done anything any sort of major fundamental upgrades, but they've still managed to end up with what is arguably now head and shoulders the fastest car on the track.
Absolutely, as proven by Sebastian. I mean, he's now ahead in the championship, isn't he? I forget how many points it is. Is it?
He's six points ahead.
6 points ahead, which is not a lot considering we've got four races to go, Carl. And I know you were the key cautious commentator, if you like, last week. How are you feeling this week?
I think it's for Vettel to lose now.
Look at that! It's completely about face. I love it. I love it. That's the way.
They look unbeatable, and he looks a bit unbeatable at the moment. I think he got ahead of Webber at the weekend, but I think eventually Red Bull might have adjusted the race so that Vettel was in the head, and I can't see them getting beat. They look like they can qualify in front of every time. Probably will change for India. McLaren might come back, but at the moment, yeah, it's Vettel to lose.
So, what do Ferrari do from here? Then are we? Is it a, can you alter this momentum? Can you reel it in?
Ferrari do what Ferrari have done this season, and that is put Fernando Alonso in the best position to win the race. And let Fernando Alonso do what Alonso does, which is drive exceedingly well. Ferrari have been good at that this season. Red Bull have been better at that in the last few races. Since Alonso had his consistently, you know, finishing in the points streak snapped by that retirement caused by Grosjean, which was, when was that? Was that Belgium? Was that as far back as that?
Yeah, it was Spa, wasn't it? First corner.
Since then, Alonso's been trying hard to sort of get out of the hole that he's dug himself into. Podium at the weekend in Korea is going to help that. All Ferrari have to do is give him a car that at least has a sniff at being competitive, and we know Fernando Alonso will do the rest. That championship's not lost yet. That championship is still attainable. We've got, what, four races left? That's a total of 100 points up for grabs, 25 points to the victor. And all that takes is Fernando Alonso to finish first twice and Vettel to finish second twice in those races. And, you know, you're looking at Alonso being champion. No doubt about that. Ferrari just needs to give him the opportunity to drive the wheels off of the car, which we know that he'll do if he gets that chance.
It's a tough one for Fernando because he kind of had a bit of bad luck, didn't he? His couple of races ended really early. There's in first lap. and that was it. And whereas before, like you say, paired, you know, maybe a second or a third to Vettel wouldn't have been such an issue because of the points advantage he had. Now he has to beat Sebastian Vettel in certainly one, if not two or three races.
I think if you look at how dominant Vettel has been over the last few races and then look at actually still how close Alonso is to him, that just demonstrates how well Alonso has, you know, has done through consistently throughout the season. Unfortunately for him, I think that they are probably the third fastest car, maybe. It's hard to tell between them and McLaren because the McLaren just seem to be making so many mistakes at the moment. And it's hard to judge their true performance. But they're definitely no better than a third place car on outright performance. So he's going to have a bit of the, you know, the Teflonso luck on his side to get him further up the grid. Now, he's fully capable of doing that. And, you know, if anyone's going to do it, Alonso is going to be the guy to do it. But you have to have a lot of luck to get Vettel away from that, you know, that pole, those pole positions, those first place finishes, and he will just, you know, carry on and motor through just like he did last year, I think.
They are tend to be the same thing, don't they? First pole positions and first places for Sebastian Vettel. We should mention the breaking news from today, of course. Felipe Massa has signed for 2013 at Ferrari, just like I believe we all said would be the case in our second half of the season preview.
I'm pretty sure
that's what we all said.
Yes,
wasn't
yes. It? I don't think there's any audio evidence to prove
quick turnaround, and he will be back and bang and wow.
I don't think I ever said that Perez or Jalpique would take the shot.
I'm worried here because I'm looking over the table and I'm seeing Kyle have that look on his face of saying I'm going to be the voice of reason and say that I'm pretty sure we did all write Massa off, but it didn't happen.
I bet Kyle didn't.
No, of course he didn't.
But I mean, I suppose the question is, if Felipe does what he's done over the last two races from now until the end of 2013, you can't complain.
Yeah, exactly. He actually looked quicker than Alonso the weekend.
Looked, he was.
Yes, yes. And the message to keep two or three seconds back to save his tyres, which of course...
I love it. There was no way at any point Felipe Massa was going to be ahead of Alonso on the track.
It would just be interesting to see when, if his contract was signed, say two races ago, or pretty much agreed two races ago, if he got his confidence from that, or that he was worried about contract and this, where these performances have come from. It'd be interesting to see how he gets on next year, if the same thing sort of happens at the start of the season. But at the moment, yeah, he's quick and he can't fault his driver at Ferrari, and yeah, deserves a drive for next year.
And for India, I suppose, because if he ends up finishing 14th in India, then we may all have a little look at that and go, ah, okay. It was a great line from Fernando, actually, when I think he was asked whether Felipe should have been allowed to go ahead of him, and he said, well, I was saving my tyres, and I think when you saw that when I could actually push, I basically left him for dead.
See, which, I don't think that's true at all. I think Ferrari missed a trick, missed a big trick there.
So let's just explain the situation then. You had Vettel and Webber ahead of Alonso. Alonso was losing time on the pair of them, and there was a suggestion that because Felipe Massa was so quick, Ferrari should have let him go past Alonso so he could catch Webber, possibly Vettel, although I don't think that would have ever happened, and in a way engineer some way that Alonso could have got ahead of Webber and then ahead of Massa, maybe.
I think they did the right thing. I think they did the right thing in leaving the two of them where they are. As a fan of racing, it's not necessarily the greatest thing, but I don't think Massa could have overtaken Webber. He might have been able to catch him or get close, but I don't think he would have overtaken him. And then he would have taken points off his teammate and possible championship contender, or definite championship contender. And I know they could have done a swap around, but it was so like late in the race, and trying to get that to work, and the possibility of them tripping over each other, and I think they were best to just hold station, take what they could. Alonso was never going to get any more than third place, so you know him. If you know if Massa had taken second, then Alonso still would have only finished fourth. So you know they did the best thing by the guy that's most likely to win a driver's championship.
See, on the other end of the scale on that, I say you let Massa pass and you let him take after Webber. Pure, I mean, any other track, I probably would agree with you. But all we heard all afternoon from the Red Bull race engineers was watch the front right, watch the front right, watch the front right. It's almost down to the car because it's almost down to everything. We know that if you've got someone hounding you on your gearbox, you lose time off of your lap times because you're more concerned with what's behind you than what's in front of you. Now, if you've got a dodgy front right tyre, and if you're constantly looking in your mirrors because you've now got the guy not only saying watch your tyres, but also Massa's pushing you. I mean, even though, in his own words, what was it, Webber's a wily old dog or a wily old fox, he called himself, something like that. The guy knows how to race, but at the same time, if Massa has got that much more speed, at least let him give it a try. David, you said it happened too late in the race. It only happened too late in the race because they'd been telling Felipe we get those messages delayed on air. It happened, you know, that could have been happening 5-10 laps in advance if you'd actually said to Felipe, do you know what, go for it. Just let the dog off the leash and go for it. You give him a certain time frame and say, if you can't catch and pass Webber by this time, you are to drop back and let Alonso go past. I mean, you don't lose anything by trying.
This is a good point. Of course, the fact that Vettel, over the last few laps, was being warned by his engineer to ease up to the point or where Vettel probably felt like he was stopping to protect his tyres in case something terrible happened and they just dropped off the cliff and the whole world exploded. And to be honest, I surely it was all brinkmanship.
I think it's all mind games for Sebastian just to calm him down, because again, Rocky's constantly on the radio saying there's no need for fastest laps or this and that, just calm me miles ahead. And yeah, there wasn't that much evidence that tyres were falling apart, and I think it was just mind management on Sebastian just to keep his head right and stop putting in them purple sectors, which I believe he did on the,
yeah, on the last
sector
lap.
Anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And by doing so, he basically gave Rocky the finger.
Yeah.
The Vettel finger.
The Vettel finger, the other finger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice of Red Bull, I suppose, to make it feel like it was on the knife edge. All part of the show.
Yeah, but well, it's hard to tell, really. You'll never really know whether it was or not. I mean, there were quite a few teams that were complaining of problems, so probably a little bit of both, I'd say, in terms of time management and bits and pieces. But going back to what we were saying about Alonso, I still think that if they'd, even if all had gone to plan and they'd got Massa up, the only thing they would have benefited from was their championship standing as a constructor. Now, I get the impression that they're more worried about getting a driver's world championship at the moment, because obviously the, I know the teams fight for the constructor championship, but they desperately want a driver, a world champion driver. And if they'd have done that, they still would have taken points away from Alonso, because there's no way that Alonso was going to get past Webber unless he had a problem.
You know what time it is. I don't need to say it, but I'm going to.
Is it hammer time?
I'm going to. It's close, David. It's close. I know you've been out of the loop. I'll allow you that. It's time for the EDP F1 pit stops. Still haven't got a jingle. First corner. Kamui Kobayashi, the hero of Japan in Japan, the villain in Yonam. Is that how you pronounce it? I didn't quite. Would it mind?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not multicultural.
I'm only familiar with Gangnam Style.
Oh no! Don't get the shots of the Czechian flag, where all the director could do was focus on the guy waving the flag. I mean, Vettel could have driven into a wall at that point. We would have known. We'd have had this guy's face.
Although, have you noticed that Webber is clearly better than Vettel in one major thing, and that is doing the Gangnam Style dance.
This is depressing me. Anyway, the first corner, Kamui Kobayashi manages to take out two cars. Bit harsh, I thought. Though they did. Did he get a bit squeezed, or is
it looked worse than it was? I think from Kobayashi's point of view, because I think he clipped the back of Rosberg, and then lost his front wing, and then obviously had no control and ploughed into the back of Jensen Button. So I think it looked worse than it was, but it's still not very clever, should we say?
I think it's mediated by the fact that we know that Kamui's not really that kind of driver. We know he's a little bit he can be, you know, the last of the late breakers at times. We know he's not afraid of having a go up the inside on sort of unconventional overtaking corners, should we say. So we know that he's an aggressive, exciting racer to watch, but we also know he's not a reckless racer. He never really has been. So I think it's mediated by that. From my point of view, I think the drive-through for him I thought was maybe a little harsh, but when you look back at what happened from that, the fact that Rosberg had to retire, you then had a safety car, Jensen Button was out calling him an idiot on the radio, everything that happened around it, you can kind of understand why the Stewarts handed it down, but I do still think that it's a little bit unfair for what he did.
It of course put Jensen out of the race. I picked up on this, and I don't know if I just heard it wrong, but it sounded to me like when Jensen was saying these drivers need to watch what they're doing, it was terrible driving. I can't remember the exact words he used. He wasn't only criticising Kobayashi, he was also criticising Perez for almost diving up the inside of him a little bit, which of course would be quite interesting, given he will be his teammate next season. How did you see it, Dave?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, my favourite driver got punted out of the race, and Kobayashi should have been sent off and told to sit on the naughty step for the rest of the race, as far as I'm concerned. No, it was... it was a mistake by Kobayashi, but mistakes happen. Fortunately enough, he's not a Grosjean, he's not a Maldonado, he's not constantly making mistakes. You've got to allow these drivers, especially when they're as relatively new to the sport as Kobayashi is, only being a season and a bit into his career, a couple of seasons and a bit into his career. He's a very good driver, and he just unfortunately made a mistake. And if you listen back to the radio message of Jensen talking about him, he did call him stupid, but you can tell by his tone of voice, he's kind of stupid boy, kind of in a kind of jokey way. He was upset, but he wasn't really angry with him, kind of thing. So, and I think with a lot of things that have gone on this season, I think it's probably, like you say, Jensen probably talking about drivers as a whole more so than just Kobayashi.
He's probably still happy about the fact he finished on the podium and Jensen was happy for Kamui. Everyone was happy for Kamui in Japan. It's just carried on. It's the honeymoon period.
Yeah.
Nico Hülkenberg, it suddenly became news that he was going to be stepping up from Force India to Perez's Sauber seat next season. This hasn't been confirmed, I don't think, has it? But it's very strong, and you would suspect it's going to happen. Yeah. Now, I know in GP2 that Nico Hülkenberg excelled, and a lot of people thought this guy is the real deal. He's had a decent season back, hasn't he?
Yes, he's getting better. I think it's the obviously had a season out last season, so he could be forgiven for getting a bit of time taking to get back into it this year. But he's improved and some good overtakes as well at the weekend. Sort of taking advantage of, I guess, Grosjean and Hamilton fighting.
Yeah, it was a great one.
I don't know if it's a step up, Sauber, going back to the, it's a sidewards step. I've heard that he hasn't been paid from Force India.
Hasn't he?
This year. And also BJ Mallier, a bit of trouble financially. Yeah. So it might be a good move to get out of Force India now. But
I don't think he'd be the only person to struggle with being paid. Possibly.
I'd do it for Bourbon Biscuit.
Well, tell VJ. You're up, David. And Ped, you should have a word as well, you know, with your new driving experience.
I'm not going to jump on the Hülkenberg bandwagon. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. During his time when he was at BMW, he managed to put the car on pole once, which was a shock. Everyone was absolutely shocked that he put this car, mainly because it was a bit of a dog of a car. But he put this car on pole once. He's been out last season. He's had a solid but unremarkable season so far with Force India. Mainly, is that because Force India are having an unremarkable season, or is it because DeResta is having a very similar season? So, you know, if DeResta was constantly at the back of the pack, Hülkenberg would look good by comparison. But the drivers are comparable. The team is not where we thought it would be this season. I'm not so sure Hülkenberg is the real deal yet. A move to Sauber financially could be better. We know the Saubers have progressed this year. The Saubers are much quicker than we thought they'd be. They do very well with young, talented drivers, Kobayashi and Perez, to say the least. So there's possibility for potential. I think it's a better move for Hülkenberg than it is for Sauber at this point in time.
Fair enough. Good stuff. Lewis and McLaren. A few suggestions that Lewis cut a bit of a lone figure at times at the weekend. This is going to be a difficult period for him, isn't it, seeing this out? And also, I'd just like to say the fact that he ruled out his driver's title championships when even some pundits think there is possibly an outside chance. That wouldn't normally be the case.
Well, I think the feeling between the two of them is it's a bit like being dumped by your girlfriend but still having to take her to your best friend's wedding. It's that kind of thing. You have to be civil with each other, but you don't really, that love is gone, and that's the kind of feeling I get between them. I have no doubt that McLaren will give him everything he needs to do as well and to win, and I have no doubt that Hamilton wants to win as much as he did, but I just, there's now this sort of slight divide starting to build. But to be fair, you know, anyone in that situation, you're going to have that same kind of feeling, I think.
Interesting times at Woking.
Yes, I heard that he was late for a press conference and they started without him.
Yeah.
Apparently he booked a bowling alley for all the mechanics, but they already pre-booked for the Jensen Button charity thing.
Oh.
So he is the sort of lone figure at the moment.
Bless him.
And I think sort of Mark Whitmarsh's comments after the race saying it was one of the best drives ever and it was superb, and because obviously with an anti-roll bar failure, I think that was kind of a message just to keep him, feeling
sweet.
Yeah, kind of, you know,
a little bit.
Yeah, still, we still actually still like you, and we still want to, you know.
We don't want to play bowls. We don't want to go bowling with you, basically. But apart from that, it's fine.
And he's growing a beard, which is the best way to show that you are trying to go against the grain with McLaren, because it's in their contract they're not allowed to grow beards.
Is it?
Yes.
And yet both he and Jensen Button have regular facial hair.
Mm. They're allowed to have it trimmed now. I think they've changed it. But originally, when the whole Alonso malarkey was going on, he wasn't allowed. Alonso fell out of favour with Ron, and to show his visual thing, he grew a beard.
Good grief! I did not realise that.
Yeah. There is a certain element of truth in that. I might have some facts wrong, but I'm generally...
Never spoil a good story for the sake of the truth, David.
I am mortified. What we're going to do, we're going to have a separate podcast, I think, in terms of previewing India. So there's just a couple of things I want to go back to as regards Korea. We should mention Lotus, Romain Grosjean. Everyone is watching Romain basically to see if A, he's going to crash his car, or B, he's going to cry, I think are the two things we're looking out for. He did neither.
No, he drove very dependably, very solidly.
Very cautiously.
Yeah, very cautiously. But that's going to put no end of confidence under his belt. And that's what Lotus need from him. They need a driver who is not a jittery ball of nerves going into the first corner. They need a driver who's settled, who knows how he can get a car to the end of the race. He knows the mechanics are there for him in the pit stops. He knows how the race is going to be managed. And he's managed to pull that off this weekend in Korea. I think, you know, this could be the start of a new Grosjean, but it will take him a while. I'm not necessarily going to say it's going to take him the 2 years that it's taken Massa to get back to being a, you know, a carefree driver, but I would say Grosjean, actually now with that experience under his belt, going to be a little bit more dependable, hopefully. Don't prove me wrong, Roman.
I like Roman, and I think it's a shame rather than horrendous about what's happened over the last few races. But you were quite strong in your email, David.
I just agreed with the pundits. He is, if you can't do something that many times and it be a one-off, because it then, you know, by virtue of the fact that he's done it more than once, it's not a one-off. It's, you can't let it slide. I don't think he's a bad driver because of it. I still think he's a great driver. You know, there's lots of things I like about him. I like the fact that when he first came into Formula One, he still went on his weekends off, went and worked in a bank, which I thought was hilarious.
Well, he's Swiss, it's in his nature.
Well, true. I know exactly where he'll be now. He'll be sat in front of his computer on whatkimmydoesnext.com watching the countdown timers to see what his teammates can do.
Absolutely. Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for your comments. That's the end of part one. We'll be back in a few days or something like that, probably, with part two. We'll look ahead to the Indian Grand Prix and a few bits and bobs. Don't forget edp24.co.uk/F1 for all the latest Formula One news with Caterham and Lotus and my weekly EDP column. And we will be back in a few days. See you then.